Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Good to be back. Henrik here with Red Ice TV, and today we are going old school Red Ice once again. We have David Icke back on the show. It was actually years ago since I spoke to him last time, and now today is a great time to reconnect again and talk about some of the recent events that has transformed absolutely everything. A new normal has arisen out of the ashes of the totally hysterical coronavirus response by governments, by corporations, and by international organizations. Now, we might be looking at a mandatory, untested, and experimental mRNA vaccine and a digital certificate in the wake of this, just to mention a couple of things. Now, this is, of course, before they allow us to go back to our jobs, to our businesses, to go outside and enjoy life with others once again. You don't have to agree with David on everything that he's talked about over the years to realize a couple of things. One, if you are familiar with some of Icke's work, you know that he's basically being validated right now with everything that he's been talking about regarding, well, for simplicity's sake, let's call it the Big Brother surveillance system, the grid that's being rolled out and put in place right now. The technocrats are using AI, artificial intelligence, surveillance, and these contact tracing apps, a PC term essentially of saying surveillance apps, and a whole new set of limitations, things that we cannot do, that's been imposed on us under the banner of keeping us safe from a virus that haven't been this monstrous killer that they said it would be. It has, at this point, not been much worse than an average flu season. It's just a fact. The numbers do not add up, and I don't care what mainstream news you've been reading or whatever you choose to believe. Those of you who have looked into it for yourself and looked at numbers know what's going on here. Now, the people that are doing this to us, of course, they do not care about you. They don't care about your kids. They do not care about our health, right? They are doing this to us because it benefits them. It's helping them to create a world which they want to impose on us, the cattle, the unwashed masses. More wealth, more control have been placed in their hands as a consequence of this. It's population control, to be put it in blunt terms. It's been the goal of the globalist class for a long, long time, and now they are getting their wish. And most people are going along with this too, by the way. They have been traumatized, utterly traumatized, by the mainstream media coverage of COVID-19. Despite there being many dissident voices, including doctors, by the way, and calls to reason when it comes to the reaction to the coronavirus. A second thing that you might realize is that David Icke has been horribly treated by social media companies and the mainstream media, the lying press. They have written smear stories of how dangerous it is for David to be able to communicate a different set of beliefs around this event. Now, I know there's a small set of spurgs that think that censorship is cool and siding with the liberal elite that are doing this to us, that are imposing this worldview on us, is somehow winning. But aside from Fed agitators and spurgs that are insane, most people can actually see that few have been hit so far this hard with censorship within such a short period of time. Maybe maybe Red Ice can match some of that. We, just like David, we lost our YouTube channel and Facebook page within the very short time span. We were also hacked. We lost the ability of using many financial services. And this was done, just like what happened to David, with the aid of politically biased pressure groups that have an invested interest in silencing people who are exposing many of these lies and the bullshit that's being done to us. Now, these are, of course, underhanded tactics, right? They're doing one thing to us. We can prove that. And then they're lying straight to our faces about it, trying to make us believe that it's not really happening. They're trying to gaslight us into giving up, essentially, thinking that we're wrong. Like, for example, with the replacement agenda. But that's just one. There's many others like that as well. So many lies. They do not like these things being brought to light. They do not like freedom of speech for obvious reasons. They do not want there to be heterodox perspectives, diversity of views, or an ability for us to impart these on audiences that has explicitly agreed to receiving them, right? They have signed up, they have subscribed and followed our various channels to receive this information. Now, these people want to make it easy for themselves. They don't want to work uphill, right? They prefer that dissent, any dissent, remains buried until they have won and gotten their way. They prefer there to be no opposition, no pushback. They want us to just roll over and go along with it. Don't think Don't question, shut up, and do what you're told. Right? Get in the pod, eat the bugs, bend over, because you're about to be screwed over in unimaginable ways if you submit to what's coming. So these are some of the things that we'll get into here today. There's some of the crazy stuff that's happened to David in the last week or two. So, David Icke, welcome back on the show. It's great to have you here, mate.
Thank you, Henrik. It's been a long time.
It has been. It's good to see you again. How are you holding up? I mean, everything with the website, that's just crazy. A DDoS attack. There are people trying to outlaw your content, essentially, in the UK now. What's going on?
Yeah, you know, it's important to see what is happening from another kind of angle, because it can seem with all this censorship that, you know, this cult, as I call it, this global cult, has all this power. But what you have is a situation where they control the global media. They control Silicon Valley. They own it. They control governments, they control the banking system, they control the big pharmaceutical cartel, they control the World Health Organization, and yet they're terrified, in this case, of one bloke in a little flat on the Isle of Wight in England, putting out information that undermines, questions, and takes apart that official narrative. So that is an indication, Henrik, which we shouldn't let pass by, of the real dynamic of power, because these people are in a very tenuous situation at the moment. I've been talking about it for now 30 years, about how the world's being manipulated towards the kind of end we're seeing. And I said there's going to come a point where they're going to have to break the surface where we can see them, because otherwise they will not be able to transform society in the way they want. It won't be a sometime, never, maybe over the rainbow. It will be a here and now in your face. And people really, unless they're completely press enter people, will not be able to deny that there's something happening here which is not the world they thought they lived in. And so what's happened is, this cult, which has been manipulating from the shadows and under the radar all these years, has now walked in the room. And what's happened is the doors click behind it. While a lot of people have, of course, bought the narrative because they'll believe anything they're told, it's like kindergarten. But the longer this lockdown has gone on, the more and more people have not bought it. I'm getting this from all different sources, backgrounds, experience, that actually there's something going on here, then it's not right. So it's been a wake-up call for a lot of people, as well as, of course, great numbers of people just buying it without question. And so what they have as they've walked into this room and the doors click behind them is they have a narrative for this virus, which is, well, I guess pathetic is the way I would describe it. It's so full of holes. It's so weak. It's so contradictory. It's so at odds with the experience facts of everyday life that the only way they can defend it is to enter this period of hysterical censorship for anyone who is unraveling, which is not difficult when you, once you get into this, unraveling the weakness, the extraordinarily unsupportable nature of the official narrative. And so we're in this situation where the censorship has literally got hysterical. I've been banned from Facebook. I've been had a channel with a million subscribers nearly on YouTube just trashed.
Yeah.
They're trying to get me off Twitter. And now we have this extraordinarily inept and desperate British MP called Damian Collins, who's now calling for what I'm saying to question the official narrative should be made illegal.
Yep, that's right.
I mean, this is a level of extreme that is beyond bizarre. And you've got on the screen Infotasian. That's an organization that this Damian Collins MP actually created specifically to target people. He calls it a fact-checking operation. He ought to fact-check himself from what I've seen, that is targeting people who are putting a different narrative other than the World Health Organization, which in other words is the Bill Gates narrative. And like I say, it's so weak and it's so unsupportable that the only thing they can do in their desperation is to censor to this extreme degree those that are unraveling the nonsense. But what it's done, Henrik, from my point of view, is, you know, I've always said that if you keep speaking your truth and you don't stop and defend yourself, or, you know, say, oh, how could you say these terrible things about me? You just go boom, 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 boom forward. Then eventually, if what you say has validity, it will be shown to be so. And what has happened in this lockdown is large numbers of people who have kind of heard about me on what I'm saying on the peripheral of their lives are now focused on it. And they're saying, hold on a minute, this is what that bloke said was going to happen. And with the extremes and the hysteria of censorship of me over the last like 3 weeks, what it's done is people who were like half looking at it or even not looking at it at all, I was saying, hold on a minute, why are they bombarding this guy who's supposed to be a nutter? That's what they told us. They told us he was a nutter.
Right.
Now they're telling us he has to be deleted from everything and what he says has to be made illegal. So what it's done, these idiots, because that's what they are, you don't have to be bright to be involved with this law, they've become my PR department, and they're drawing enormous numbers of people to look at my work who wouldn't otherwise have done so. But you see, that's what happens when you're desperate. The desperation is we cannot let our narrative be challenged because it will fall apart. So we've got to do all this censorship, but in doing that, you're alerting people to actually, maybe this guy has something to say.
Right.
And I've seen enough, people have told me a number of times, many, many times, they've seen comments on the internet in response to all this censorship. Hold on a minute. I thought you said this guy was a nutter. I'm going to have a look now at what he's saying. So that it's been very counterproductive.
Now, you had... As far as I remember, the coverage that you did on COVID-19, and you've kept up with that diligently, of course, on your YouTube channel. You had millions of views there. There was hundreds of thousands, most of the videos that you did, 200, 300, 400,000, some approaching million, I think. And you had an increase of like a few million new visitors and stuff just in the last couple of months as you've covered this, as, of course, you've offered something which we haven't been able to get on mainstream channels. And, you know, it would be one thing, no, it would never justify it, but it would be one thing, David, if the arguments that the scientists put forth and the World Health Organization, if that would have been rock solid, right, in science, there was no question, if they had not done all these essentially mistakes. I still don't know if it's ineptitude or if it's intentional, but remember the World Health Organization, they said there's no human-to-human transmission, keep the borders open, keep everything coming, go out, hug a Chinese person. They had a day like that in Italy, which is like, did this contribute to the spread? We don't know, right? But the fact is, they said so many dumb things that now it's more important than ever to get a different view because they've been flip-flopping on every issue. Remember the mask issue too? Even Fauci over in the U.S. was like, first they said, this is pointless. It doesn't matter. It doesn't help. The virus particles are too small. Now it's mandatory, and you can be imprisoned for not wearing a mask, right? So the narrative has been on very, very shaky ground. So why would they not allow different viewpoints to come into this picture, right?
Yeah, well, they wouldn't, because their story is so weak and, like you say, so contradictory that if they allowed other views to enter the arena, the main public arena, then what would happen is their story would just be like a snowball in the sun. It would just dissolve and disappear. Its credibility would go. See, look at what they're defending. They're defending their claim that we have a deadly virus when the death numbers do not support that. We are told that we had to have the lockdowns to defend. And you have on the screen now, by the way, a guy called Tedros, who's a total crook, former employee of Bill Gates. He's just a mouthpiece for Bill Gates. We were told that the lockdowns had to happen because we had to defend the hospitals from being overwhelmed. So they're defending that narrative, and they have a system in this country, which is almost hilarious, really, what it is, where every week on a particular day, people go outside and their houses and clap the health workers who are saving us from the virus. And yet the hospitals, not just in this country, but in other countries like America, are empty. You know, we're having hospitals in this country so empty and so with so little to do that the nurses are making dancing videos in empty wards and putting them on the internet.
Pretty choreographed, by the way. It looks like it took probably a few days to pull those together, to be honest.
Exactly. I mean, I was stopped in the street just down the road from where I am by a intensive care worker at the local hospital here. And he came up to me. He said, you know, what you're saying about the hospitals is true. He said they've never been so quiet. But the public perception is that they're overrun and they're war zones. Now, what they've done is put security staff around the hospitals. They've banned visitors. We've had children in this country, and Henrik, who have died in hospital alone, not of the virus, of other things, because the parents weren't allowed in because of the virus rules. That's the level of psychopathy we are dealing with. So what you've got is the truth, so easy to prove, and an official narrative that's holding on for dear life and can only survive by censorship. We have, and I've been aware of this for a long time, but we've had many doctors now come out and indeed official statements saying that that the death figures for COVID-19 are being fixed. Where, you know, people falling down the stairs are being given COVID-19 on the death certificate, people dying of cancer, people dying of heart disease. As long as you go into hospital, pretty much they'll find a way of saying it's COVID-19.
We
were contacted by someone in the last week or so who was telling the story of the girl who went to a London hospital with a broken foot, she broke her ankle. And when she got in there, the first thing they said to her was, "No, you don't know what's wrong with your ankle, but you don't look well." Right? And this started a sequence where they took her for an x-ray, and she thought they were going to x-ray her foot. They wanted to x-ray her chest. And then they wanted her to go on a COVID ward, and she was obviously a sensible girl and got the hell out of it, still with an untreated broken foot. But you know, because there's no visitors, there's no loved ones, people go into these hospitals and basically there's no one watching their back or their front. And they've got old people to sign. This is the pressure to sign do not resuscitate agreements. And then when they die, it's called COVID-19. We're having all this testing with a test that's not actually testing for COVID-19, which they've never isolated to prove actually exists. And this is where all the figures are coming from. And they're being gathered together and repeated by the global media by this American organization, the Johns Hopkins University operation, medical operation, that is hand in glove with Bill Gates and the World Health Organization. So it's a complete scam, a complete setup and stitch up. But highlighting the truth is so easy that they have to go in for the censorship. This is why you had these two doctors in California who were filmed by a local mainstream TV station pointing out the lockdowns were unjustified, pointing out the pressure on doctors to put COVID-19 on the death certificate when that wasn't the cause of death. And the small percentage numbers of chance that you have of dying of this thing, if you believe it exists, and I don't. And they got to 5 million regular doctors talking from their own experience, and YouTube, Susan Wojcicki, pulled it.
Yeah.
And people say, well, that's outrageous. How can they do that? Listen, they have to do that. They have to do that because their story is so easily demolished that they have to go in for these levels of censorship.
Yeah, it's crazy. So obviously there's a lot of threads here to kind of that I want to get into as well. But the YouTube issue real quick here too. This issue that they were taking a policy they said essentially, if you do not repeat what the World Health Organization, if they're the same line, you could lose your channel, you could get strikes, whatever. Did you have any correspondence with YouTube? Did they send you an email and say, like, we've just shut down your channel, or you've got strikes on the videos? What happened on that front?
We got no strikes. It was the usual sequence, Henrik. They contacted us to say they were demonetizing all our videos. Now that's all. You know what's coming then.
Yeah.
And then an organization in Britain, which connects into the British Labour Party, connects into ultra-Zionism, where funding's coming from, called the Centre for Countering Digital Hate, which was created, the CEO, who's claiming credit with the rest of the rabble involved, there's not many, to have had me banned from Facebook and YouTube, they came out with this report saying that my misinformation about the virus was getting out to tens of millions of people. They actually underestimated the figure, actually. And that they were going to, ask YouTube and Facebook to pull my page and my channel. And then YouTube came to us just with one kind of email very soon after that, saying that they were pulling the channel with a million subscribers. Because they'd had a complaint. That's what it said.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And then this group then claimed that they were responsible, and supporting this group was Damien Collins. This guy now wants to make what I'm saying illegal. And what has happened, Henrik, is a citizen journalist who is a supporter of my work and goes to the website. Once this happened, he started, and he's been ferocious in his pursuit of this over the last couple of weeks or so. He started looking into the background of this digital hate organization, and he's uncovered a very big web. Goes into America, goes into the neocons in America, the very neocons from which this other censorship organization, NewsGuard, came out of. The fact that the current leader of the opposition Labour Party in Britain, if you can call it an opposition, called Keir Starmer, his campaign manager that won him the leadership, a guy called Morgan McSweeney, was actually the creator of this organization originally. I have been talking in the last few days about an extraordinary situation, because Britain is really at the center of all this in so many ways. I mean, the justification for lockdown, which was ludicrous computer models predicting a 500,000 dead in Britain and 2 million up to 2 million in America, came out of London and the Imperial College, and a guy called Professor Neil Ferguson. So London, is really at the heart of this in so many ways. And people find it strange how this came about. But there is an organization that is part owned and fully controlled by the UK Cabinet Office. This is the office around the Prime Minister. And they have an organization called the Behavioral Insight Team, which is operating, and they brag this, in 31 countries. And this Behavioral Insight Team is connected into this, you know, Cass Sunstein.
Oh, yeah, the 9-11 stuff, right? He injected all those conspiracy. He was saying that they were going to infiltrate the 9-11 movement, and essentially it broke apart after that point, right?
Well, that's Cass Sunstein. He was that, quote, czar in the ludicrous name in the Obama administration.
Yeah.
But he was behind this whole concept of nudging, if you remember, where you just kind of just touch nudge behavior in the direction you want with little, manipulation devices. Well, this whole nudge perception came out has been encompassed by this Cabinet Office in the UK Behavioral Insight Team. And one of the advisors to this team is actually a co-author of this nudge concept of Sunstein. And so what you've got is this web out of London across into America and elsewhere that is running this psyop. Because all this social distancing, all this you must stay 6 feet apart, 2 meters apart, all the mask or no mask, it's all behavior manipulation in precisely the same way, in principle, as teaching a dog not to crap in the house or to beg. And this is why they're going in for ridiculous, contradictory, fine detail impositions. Like a few days ago, Boris Johnson, who's completely been co-opted by these dark suits connected to Gates, he came out with a rollback of the lockdowns. Well, he claimed it was. But what this rollback involves, for example, is that an estate agent can come into your house, real estate agent, you would call him in America. He can come into your house, or she can come into your house, but your parents can't. And you can meet one parent in a park, and then 10 minutes later, you can meet your other parent in the park, but you can't meet them both together. And you can't meet them in their garden, because that means in many houses they say that you might have to go through the house to get to the garden, and it's a stream of things like that. You can have a cleaner in, you can have a nanny in, but you can't have your parents in or your grandparents in, and it makes no sense whatsoever. But it's not meant to. It's all about training people to be acquiescent in fine detail and become therefore ongoing acquiescent. Two of the most unpleasant, sickening pictures I've seen since this whole thing started were a school playground with kids standing in chalk boxes 6 feet from each other, not allowed to leave them and play with the other kids. Children outside of school waiting for their parents to pick them up, parents all with masks on 6 feet apart, and the kids sitting on X's 6 feet apart. What they're doing here is driving humanity apart, and it's incredible, well, not incredible really, it's predictable, but anyway, the goals and the outcomes demanded by the climate change hoax are pretty much the same as this pandemic hoax. And one of the the common themes between the two is that humans are dangerous. We have to be frightened of each other. Humans are to be avoided because we're dangerous. We're a threat to each other. Humans collectively are a threat to the existence of the world. It's all focused on anti-human perception. While at the same time, they're driving people into a closer and closer relationship with machines. Human relationships are being driven apart. Human-machine relationships are being driven together. And that's all part of this fusion in the end of humans and machines.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that is something I want to get into, the technological grid that's kind of rising up in the wake of this. So, I mean, these are things that I've worked on for a long time, but artificial intelligence is really being heavily implemented in these tracing apps and stuff like that. Even ironically, Damien, what was his last name again? Damien, almost said Hirst, but that's another guy, right? Collins. He linked up actually to an article himself. I saw him in his Twitter feed, where he said there was worrying privacy concerns that 48 apps had already been released by Google and Apple on their Play stores, the App Store, where the primary function of these was just to track as much information as possible and then, of course, sell it to third parties, while people use this app and think that they're somehow helping the government to, you know, for tracing and staying apart and all that stuff. But this, explain that a little bit to you. You've talked about this for years in terms of, you know, machine learning or artificial intelligence, the surveillance grid, everything tracked and monitored is being fed into this one system where essentially whoever can tap into that can control everything, right? We're talking about digital currencies. We're talking about self-driving cars. It's this Internet of Things kind of world that they want, where essentially if you become a thought criminal, a dissident, an outcast, that would essentially flip a switch and everything would be shut down, right? You can't drive a car. You can't utilize your money, maybe even your utilities will be shut down. This is a nightmare scenario, especially for those, of course, who are not behaving well. I guess it taps into the social credit score. But you tell us about this.
Yeah, I mean, the last few weeks have been like watching my books unfold before my eyes. It's been quite bizarre, the speed in which it's happened. I've been writing for decades about the goal, the end game, of connecting the human brain, human body to AI, and AI becoming the human mind, becoming human perception. Up to this point, they've controlled human perception by controlling information, which becomes human perception. They're doing it now on a grand scale, of course, with all this censorship. But the end goal, and they're openly talking about it, and the reason they're telling us now that they want to connect the human brain to AI is because they're heading for the point that they talk about 2030. They're heading for the point where it's planned to happen. So they've had to go from denial and the hiding stage to the selling stage. So we've gone from it's all a load of rubbish and a conspiracy theory to the sales pitch.
Yeah,
and the sales pitch is that it will make us superhuman. It will not. It will make us subhuman and posthuman. That's the idea.
But we'll be safe, David. It will be protecting us, right? That's the pitch.
This is the pitch of the pandemic hoax, is to sell 24/7 mass surveillance on the grounds that you'll be protected, because there is a mechanism in the human brain, the survival mechanism, which if you tap into that, you can override rational thought. And part of that mechanism is called the reptilian brain, ironically, from some of the stuff that I've written over the years and still stand by the way. And once you trigger this survival mechanism, basically it's I must survive whatever. So if that means surviving by accepting a draconian state of control, then the unchecked survival response will say, yeah, I'll accept that. You know, we have had billions of people under effective house arrest, and large numbers of them quite willingly, because this survival mechanism was triggered. And they are using this now to get people to give away basic freedoms on the premise that it will protect them and make it more likely that they will survive. So it's all a scam, and it's all just an excuse to do what they plan to do all along. And the idea is to connect the human brain to AI, indeed the body in general, through nanotechnology, which will bring us round to the Gates vaccine in a second, that we will no longer be thinking, feeling human beings that we've known up to this point, but we will be basically terminals on an AI internet. The internet of things, where everything basically is connected to the internet, everything from your fridge to your car and your television, all of it, is part of what they are also calling the internet of everything. And the internet of everything is the inclusion with the internet of things of the human mind. And so to do that, they need to create a grid, what people like the Google executive Ray Kurzweil, who's pushing this AI brain connection, calls the cloud. The cloud has to be covering every inch of the planet, because the idea is that we, instead of being expansive consciousness capable of connecting to infinite awareness, we actually connect out of the five sense level of being into the cloud. And that basically becomes our soul, if you like. And from that point, the cloud will be the human mind, AI. Now, if you're going to do that, and you're going to encompass and you're going to entrap every man, woman, and child on the planet into that, which is the plan, then first of all, you have to have the cloud covering every inch of the planet. And while this lockdown has been going on, you've had this massive rollout all across the world of 5G broadcasting transmitters. And you've had this continuing launching by the SpaceX front of Elon Musk of low orbit satellites pounding this stuff back at the Earth. And it's from satellite that they're covering all the areas that they can't cover from the ground. And during this lockdown, the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, which is owned by this cult, and which owns also the telecommunications industry, that's why 5G has been rolled out without any independent testing. During this lockdown, the FCC has given Musk permission for up to 1 million ground-based antenna to interact with these satellites that are going up all the time. He's been given permission for something like putting 12,000 up there. He wants 42,000, and there are other companies doing the same, that one out of Britain called OneWeb. Already, even with the relative few compared with 42,000 that have gone up there, the astronomy community in the world has been kicking off because the night sky is disappearing and they're not able to see it. Well, imagine what 42,000, even 12,000 will do to the night sky. So this grid is being built all around us, this smart grid. Everything that is called smart in terms of technology, everything that is called smart in terms of way of doing things, is part of this whole smart grid, which is designed to encompass humanity. And humanity becomes basically just another version of a smartphone. What they have to do is connect us to this grid in the same way of the antennas of Elon Musk in America. And the plan is to do this, not even through microchips that you can see, but through nanotechnology. And one major way they want to get this latest level of nanotechnology into every man, woman, and child in the, on the planet is through the Gates vaccine. And this is this whole pandemic hoax has been for three main reasons. One, to destroy the independent livelihoods of the population so that they are dependent on the state and therefore have to do what the state says to get the measly, barely survivable income that is planned under the heading of guaranteed income. Two, to justify this this grid of surveillance and control, and to say that people must be effectively be chipped so that they can be read by technology to see if they have a temperature or whether they're a danger to anybody. And I've just finished a book, a new book, which is coming out pretty soon. And 85% of it was written before this lockdown thing kicked off. And the chapters I've done on the pandemic completely describe what I said in the first 85% was the plan. And one of the things I say in that early part of the book is that Gavi, this vaccine alliance of Bill Gates, was developing this quantum tattoo on the basis of putting it into children in the third world as a digital identity to track those who'd been vaccinated and not. But of course, now we see the real reason that, yes, but the real reason that they were developing this, and that's because this was coming. It's no accident that, was it in March that Bill Gates stepped down from Microsoft because he wanted to focus on his philanthropy?
Well, David, did you see that there was I could pull up the article here in a moment. There was actually a record number of CEOs that quit during, I think it was either January or February 2020. In other words, there was, when the market was at the top, there was like a bunch of them that jumped ship, right? And they got out when it was high. They got their big, what do you call them? Their golden parachutes or their, you know, deals that they get when they resign and stuff like that. I mean, which implies that some of these guys, they knew that it was coming, Bill Gates included, you know?
This has been planned for a long time. And, you know, when this started, Enric, I was doing an interview in London, and I said, and they said, well, you know, they say they're looking for a vaccine. This was in the quite early days. And I said, the vaccine already exists. They've got to find a vaccine. The vaccine exists before they played the hoax. But because it takes years to develop a vaccine, even those that cause terrible harm to people, they can't just come out with it, or we'd know it was there before the start of this whole thing. So what they've done is they're pushing it as fast as possible, and they're now talking in Britain through Oxford University of having a vaccine ready for September. Now, this in vaccine creation terms, developing terms, et cetera, is absolutely insane and ridiculous. But there's two things here. One, the contents of the vaccine already exists that they want to get into us. And that is the major part of that is nanotechnology microchips to connect us to this grid, and not only microchips, but self-replicating nanobots that will change the nature of the human body and change human DNA, mutate human DNA, because they want this vaccine to be one of these never used on humans DNA genetic manipulation vaccines.
mRNA vaccine. Yeah, never. And then the company that was given, by the way, the contract, I think we're talking about in the half of billions. And Trump essentially just said yes because the French CEO, when they're sitting at a meeting, said, I'll have it to you in 2 months. It's like the fastest possible, right? Yeah. But this company has never had a product to market. It hasn't been proven to exist. But what it means, though, if they do achieve, well, whatever that means, can we trust it, right? But if they do bring it to market, and if it does, if it becomes mandatory or whatever, it means that we will have an mRNA vaccine, which is an experimental thing which we've never seen before, right? And to go a step further, think about this thing that, you know, you were covering so well in the beginning when you kind of got into this about the this weirdness about the RNA nature of the virus, whatever China isolated, right? There's this exosomes kind of overlap that are we talking about a natural immune response that exists in the body that they are now targeting. If this mRNA vaccine, which is essentially is a way for, well, in the nicest terms, they say it's your body that produces the medicine, they say. But essentially, it turns you into a genetically modified organism. It starts to changing your genetic makeup to fight this supposed vaccine. What if it's designed to fight the very immune response that, that we have, which is a naturally occurring thing? I mean, this is insanity, David.
Well, first of all, they've been targeting the human immune system for decades and decades in many and various ways. You know, the dots that connect into this are absolutely vast. And that's what I've done in this book. I've connected all these dots and then it goes into this pandemic and they all connect into this pandemic, all of them. So the idea is to get this vaccine into us so that we have this connection and the body starts to change through this self-replicating nanobot nanotechnology. And so what I've been saying over the years is that they want to create a they've actually got a name for it now. They call it synthetic biology.
Yeah, yeah.
Want to change the nature of the human body to a synthetic form. And this synthetic form will not be able to procreate. The procreation will be done in accordance with Aldous Huxley's Brave New World in World Hatcheries. It will be done technologically, and procreation will cease if this goes to its fruition. This is why male sperm counts are plummeting all over the world, and fertility is falling. It's because they want to bring an end to human fertility. And this will connect us into another dot, which is this out of nowhere. And when it comes out of nowhere and is suddenly everywhere, that's the red flag every time, of transgender hysteria. What they're doing is manipulating particularly the perception of the young, who are going to be the adults when this becomes full blown, to have no sense of gender. So they want a genderless, biologically synthetic body, synthetic biology body, which won't procreate. And what they're doing with this hysteria of transgender is they are confusing gender and confusing gender on the road to fusing gender, where there will be no gender. All these things connect. And so this pandemic has ticked every box in terms of all these different expressions of the agenda being advanced by what's going on. And like you say, when you look at the background to the story of the pandemic, it's very clear what has happened and what the strategy has been. Yes, they've made mistakes here and there with public statements, but they do that. But the thrust of it is very clear. What they did was start this in China. And to emphasize this point, if people want to understand how this cult works, well, forget national borders. Forget it. Forget races. Forget all of it. This is a cult that works like a transnational corporation, where they have a headquarters, in this case, in the shadows, and they have subsidiary networks in all the different countries whose job is to control that country's politics and government, the health system, the banking system, financial system, major corporations, media ownership, and to introduce and impose and manipulate the centrally dictated agenda in their particular sphere of influence. And I've been saying for years that China is one of the major global centers of this cult. And one of the key reasons for that is that China has been incubating the world system they want to introduce globally. And by the way, if people just stop and think, what has this guy's an automaton. I don't think this guy is fully biological personally. And I'm not saying that for effect. I actually do think that there's something very strange about this man. There's no life in his eyes, and his eyes never smile, even when he forces his mouth to against, all his impulses. His eyes never smile. He's a very, very strange, strange man.
Have you seen how he's reading, by the way? He actually claims to be reading as a machine. Did you see some of that footage? It's very interesting.
No,
maybe I can pull it up here later. It's kind of interesting. Anyway, sorry, you go on.
I think he is a form of AI. And people will say, oh, I'm mad again. I'm not kidding. You see, I think that a lot of these, and I've been writing about this for years before any of this happened. You know that I said a few minutes ago that we're moving towards this synthetic biological human. I think these bloodlines are already there. I think what they're doing is moving humanity towards them, so that humanity can be assimilated basically into them. This is what AI is. I think AI is actually a non-human consciousness. Okay, you've got algorithmic AI, fair enough. You've got this learning AI, as they call it, which learns from all the data that's poured into it day by day, minute by minute, from all the stuff that humans post on the internet, so that this AI becomes incredibly knowledgeable about what makes humans tick, knows far more about humans than humans do. But there's another level of AI, which I say is actually a non-human consciousness, which is planning to infiltrate the human mind via this AI connection. The whole point of where we're going is to bring about this fusion of machines and the human mind via this conduit of this synthetic biology. This whole transgender is preparing people to come about to that end. But as I was saying, what has the West become so much more like since this pandemic scare was played? China.
Yeah.
Because China's the blueprint. China's the blueprint society, and then some. But they want the Chinese model running globally.
Can I play a clip? Check this out, Dave. It's a minute and a half long. This is it kind of encapsulates what you're saying right here. Check this out.
Okay. Constantly monitored by facial recognition cameras that are able to instantly put a face to a name. Now the Chinese are also ranked. Teachers at this primary school in China know exactly when someone isn't paying attention. These headbands measure each student's level of concentration. The information is then directly sent to the teacher's computer and to parents. This fifth grader, whom we caught dozing off in class, told us his parents punish him for low attention scores. China has big plans to become a global leader in artificial intelligence. It has enabled a cashless economy where people make purchases with their faces. A giant network of surveillance cameras with facial recognition helps police monitor citizens. Students wear uniforms with chips that track their locations. There are even surveillance cameras that monitor how often students check their phones or yawn during classes. Experts and citizens alike are sounding alarms about various aspects of the country's huge push into artificial intelligence. These classrooms are laboratories for future generations.
Yeah, there you go. These classrooms are laboratories for future generations, she says right at the end. They, of course, seem very excited about this. This is going to be great or whatever. But I think this is the part of the reason why also organizations like the UN and the World Health Organization is very, very careful, if ever, they actually criticize China, right? Because they're a model country. What they're doing is what the rest of the world will look like, right?
Yeah, so that's been incubated. You see, in the West, well, until now, they've had to some extent pay lip service to freedom and democracy. And so they've been able to move it until this big push forward lockdown. They've had to move it slower than they could in a unbelievably tyrannical tyranny like China that could just say, this is what we're doing and it's happening. So they could move it quicker. So that's why China's been able to incubate the global system. And so if we take that and then play it in a sequence in this pandemic, first of all, you have the World Health Organization created by the Rockefellers and second biggest funder, probably be the biggest funder soon, Bill Gates, runs the World Health Organization. And Tedros, the crook from Ethiopia, who was on the payroll of Gates' organizations, he becomes director general. So first of all, they set out that the World Health Organization narrative and the YouTube socks, their front people are just that, front people. And so they say, we will censor anyone that questions or challenges the World Health Organization narrative. So these two wings of the cult are both operating in unity.
Yeah.
Now, the crucial thing in this whole sequence was that the Chinese response to the virus had to become, at the start, the blueprint for how the world would react to it. That was crucial. Absolutely had to happen for the rest of the sequence to work. So people became ill in Wuhan. Wuhan is a notoriously toxic city with lots of respiratory problems and pneumonia and all these things that come from the incredibly toxic air. And some people became ill, it was said. What they became ill from, we still don't know. So the Chinese authorities then took some samples from lung fluid, about seven of them, very few, and they located some genetic material, an RNA code. But it wasn't the code of a virus, it was a genetic material. They never isolated the virus. I mean, there's a guy I've interacted with a lot in New York State called Dr. Andrew Kaufman, who's a forensic investigator on the medical in medical areas. And he's gone back to the original papers, not secondhand, firsthand. They've never isolated this virus in the way that they should have done. But they decided it was a virus. And first of all, they started diagnosing this, quote, COVID-19 on the basis of symptoms. And we remember what the symptoms were, flu-like. Well, if you want people in Wuhan with flu-like symptoms in the winter, well, you know, where do you start? They're everywhere. So they started diagnosing them COVID-19. They then introduced this test, which, as doctors and medical scientists have pointed out, I quoted them in my book, as saying is not testing for COVID-19. It's testing for an RNA code, which you find in the bodies of many, many people, which is why so many are testing positive, because they're not testing positive for the virus. This is why so many people test positive for a virus and have no symptoms, because they haven't got a virus. Crucially, the Chinese reaction, as always, was draconian lockdown. So the numbers of cases And deaths in China, right at the start, are coming from re-diagnosing symptoms as COVID-19 and testing people not for COVID-19, but for genetic material. And the numbers went up. And then the media eventually kicked in. Oh, God, this is terrible. Look at it. People are being locked away in their homes and pulled off the street. And this terrible virus. And then suddenly they were building hospitals, if you remember, Henrik.
Yeah, right.
China
right.
were building hospitals to meet the demand of this terrible virus in a matter of 10 days or so, or even less. Oh, I've got COVID-19. What happened then is their numbers started to drop dramatically. And of course, if you release a real virus, you've immediately lost control of it. But if you don't have a real virus, but you're actually creating the illusion of one by the way that you're manipulating the figures, you have absolute control when the figures go up, when the figures go down. So these figures started to fall dramatically. And these hospitals were like closed. And what did the World Health Organization say? China has shown the way to deal with this virus. Draconian lockdowns.
Yeah, right.
But China is still a long way away and from the West. And it is a tyrannical, fascist, communist state, the same bloody thing. So it's still one step away in the psychology from the West, still like somewhere over the rainbow. They needed a place to terrify the West of this, quote, virus that was in the West. And what they picked was Northern Italy. Northern Italy in the area of Lombardy just happens to be another globally notorious area for toxic air and lots of respiratory and pneumonia deaths and disease every year. And I looked at the death figures for Lombardy in 2018, and it was just a few hundred short of 100,000. This is from all causes. The next region of Italy was 57,000 deaths from all causes. A lot of people die in Lombardy in northern Italy every year. And so, again, they started redesignating diseases of pneumonia and respiratory problems, COVID-19, that were other causes. In fact, to a very large extent, the Italian authorities have now admitted this. One spokesman said that they were, quote, generous in their designations of COVID-19. I say they were totally and utterly generous, 100%. But anyway, you had all these pictures of oh, my God, the terrible things going on in Italy, a Western country that people can psychologically relate to. And what did the Italians do? They whacked in this lockdown of the whole country, which has been severe and draconian. And so when it started coming to the West, and you see, when you've got these pyramids, these cult pyramids or cult control pyramids in the different countries, say in each country you've got the pyramid of the health system, you don't need many people. You don't need to control many people in that pyramid. You only need to control those that dictate policy. And so what doctors and medical staff were being told in all these different countries, centrally coordinated, is you must diagnose COVID-19, first of all, from flu-like symptoms. In the winter, when flu's everywhere, you must put COVID-19 on the death certificate if they not even if they test positive for the test, which is not testing for COVID-19, but even if you believe that that's the case, you bring in, as they have in America, through the Medicare system, payments to hospitals that are $4,600 if you diagnose someone with regular pneumonia, $13,000 if you diagnose them with COVID-19 pneumonia, and $39,000 if a COVID-19 pneumonia patient goes on a ventilator. And you have a situation like we have, say, in Scotland, in this country, where if this is the regulation, that if someone tests positive for COVID-19 with a test that's not testing for COVID-19 and they die of any other cause within 28 days, then COVID-19 goes on the death certificate. So this is what's been going on all over. And some doctors have come out, quite a number cumulatively now, but nothing like the numbers it should be. And they've said we're being told to put COVID-19 on death certificates that when they've not died of that. And that, you know, the virus is not making sense from the point of view of what we're told we should expect from it, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And through this situation, they have created an illusion of cases and deaths which are being compiled by the Johns Hopkins University operation, which is hand in glove with Bill Gates and the Big Pharma cartel. And you'll notice the language, and this language has been used so often, it can't be by accident, by the media and by the governments, that someone has died or this number of people have died after testing positive for COVID-19, not died of, after testing positive for a genetic material that's not COVID-19. But when it goes to the next stage, to Johns Hopkins or to the government statistics office, suddenly they morph into died of in the official figures. We've had a guy called Valance, the scientific advisor to Boris Johnson, who was an executive of GlaxoSmithKline that has massive connections to Gates, by the way. And he actually said, just because it says COVID-19 on the death certificate, I mean, wait for this, doesn't mean they died of COVID-19. We've had the chief medical officer, I think it's of Illinois, coming out and saying the same. So the figures are irrelevant. It's not even worth looking at them. Because, you know, how many people have died and how many people have got it, even if there isn't it, and I say there isn't, is that the figures absolutely do not reflect what's happened.
No, and, so again, people are not accustomed to sitting and looking at death rates and how many die each week or month or year, or you know what I mean? And so far, we'll see if they... if they do fake these numbers at the end, or what you know, they might or whatever, but so far there is not an increase, right? We have this massive drop off of flu deaths, which of course is in the tens of thousands every year, where COVID now has taken, you know, it took over essentially. There's other cases of cancer, heart disease, all these things that used to be fairly high, and COVID has taken over the spot of those. And we know that there's like 5, 6 even underlying conditions. Italy in the early days, they did this too. There was like 98%, I think. Had other pre-existing conditions. They faked the numbers. I mean, that's just a fact. I mean, they the CDC had an official policy to say even if it's assumed that the patients have had it, even if they did not test, COVID went on the death certificate. You know,
this is how they've done it. A German doctor said something that encompassed it all in terms of the whole thing. He said, "We don't have a new virus. We have a new test."
Right.
So that the test is claiming to test for a virus it's not testing for. It's testing for a genetic material that large numbers of people have in their body, so they're going to test positive.
And I showed this. Quickly intervene this. I know you covered it too. You mentioned it. But so Tanzania is obviously kind of a little skeptical, I would assume, of Western interference or something like that. So they did decide to do – essentially, they trolled the testing people. I don't know if they had a facility there in Tanzania, if they sent it off to another country. But regardless – the president there, he decided to do tests on, or they sent off, they marked them with a name and an age and a place and everything, right? But it was from a goat, from a sheep, from a papaya, and even motor oil they sent off, and they all tested positive. Now, the cover-up of this is, oh, it's faulty tests kind of thing, right? They're contaminated or something like that. But this opened up a pretty interesting question mark here. Like, what exactly is this? And why is it that they can test a person... these were many cases like this. People have walked in literally to a hospital. They have cancer. They're dying. The doctors are testing them. Nothing happens. They test them again. And again and again and four or five times. And the fifth or sixth time they test positive, and then, oh, we got to go. They isolate the guy. He ends up dying, and then they put COVID-19 on the certificate, right? I mean, this is nuts.
You know, the guy that invented this PCR test, the guy called Kerry Mullis, he said it shouldn't be used for diagnosing infectious disease. He developed the test and got a Nobel Prize for it, I think, in the 1980s. And so it's a total scam. The whole thing's a scam. And we go back to what we were talking about earlier. This is why this extraordinary censorship is being imposed. They have no choice if they want to protect their story, their ludicrous story, because it's simply does not stand up to the most basic scrutiny. And in terms of the figures, Andrew Kaufman, Dr. Andrew Kaufman, who I mentioned earlier, has described how he's followed the CDC deaths from all causes figures all the way through this. And they're slightly lower than average years, not higher, as you would expect. And again, as you mentioned, there was a graph I saw at one point where the number of deaths from other causes was going down at the same rate that COVID-19 deaths were going up. It was so obvious. But what we are going to see is probably an increase in overall deaths, almost certainly, because of deaths from the lockdown.
Right.
This PSYOP has become so ingrained in the minds of people, the terror of what I say is a virus that doesn't exist is such that I was reading an article about a British cancer doctor, a guy called Sullivan, and he was saying that the life expectancy of loads of people is going to be seriously reduced because people have not been seeking diagnosis or treatment for cancer because they are terrified of going to the hospital because of COVID-19. And he came out with the line, which just encompasses the scale of the mind scam that's gone on, the mind program. People are more frightened of COVID-19 than cancer. People with heart problems have not been to the hospital because and sought diagnosis. And because they've shut down the family doctor system in Britain, as they would have done in many other countries, you can't get to see a doctor anyway. It's all on the end of the phone stuff. And so the number of people that are going to die as a result of the lockdowns is going to be very, very, very high and very tragic. And what they're also doing, Henry, is they're killing old people on purpose. I've put in my books over the years this plan to take out old people once they can't serve the system anymore, and to, in the end, have what they call a demise pill, where you get to a certain age and then you take the demise pill. And they've taken the opportunity here, while saying that we have to have lockdown to protect the old and vulnerable, to take out a large number of old people. First of all, they're getting them to sign do not resuscitate forms, which means that they're just left to die. Things like this have come out via New York hospitals, via British hospitals and nursing homes, direct to us at davidicke.com. And one nurse in a nursing home contacted us and said, they're murdering my patients. He said, what's happening is that they are designating the old people in the nursing home to have COVID-19 with no test, even the ludicrous test that's not testing for it, not even the lip service of that. And then once they get that designation, doctors aren't coming anymore. He said, they're dying of other things. He said, it's like we're desperate to get antibiotics for these people in the in his nursing home, because infections are rife with old people, obviously, especially as the immune system starts to diminish fast. But they couldn't get them. And patients were dying, not of COVID-19, but of other things as a result of this. But of course, we come back to it, when they died, COVID-19 went on the death certificate.
Yeah.
So now there's all these people are dying in care homes from COVID. No, they're not. They're dying because of your freaking lockdown.
And again, the very reason, it's very interesting how they did this, because it's the first time, I believe, ever in history that they have make a decision to quarantine the healthy, right? The response has always been to protect the vulnerable, right? And if you're in the risk group or whatever, well, you isolate them, you make sure that they're safe or whatever. And quickly, I just want to show you this story because it is kind of interesting. Came across it yesterday. Did you know that there was a 14-year-old girl who is the daughter of a researcher at Sandia Laboratories that actually is the origin of the lockdown idea? She was actually doing computer-generated tests back in 2006. And her name was Laura Glass, right? She's the daughter, a high school student. I'm not going to go through it now. I highlighted a bunch of stuff in the article here, but it's very interesting. The article is called The 2006 Origins of the Lockdown Idea. And it talks about how George W. Bush, the son, how when they had the 2006 outbreak of, what was it, the avian flu, he essentially said, can we create some kind of research, investigate what we do if the real thing hits kind of thing. And so a number of researchers, two of them were assigned to do this, and they found the research of the Sandia Laboratories and stuff that this young girl. And they said, but it will be too unpopular. Essentially, like the effects of it, even back then, they said, are going to be so unpopular and so severe that we don't recommend doing it. But it actually became official government policy under George W. Bush. And then now, of course, when the real thing hits, of course, right, they went back to this. And so this is what they went to. It's a very interesting article. But it shows that it's like, it's all of this, same thing with Neil Ferguson, right? These are based on faulty, phony, it's like, what do you say? Shit in, shit out, right? That's what you say. If you have a computer model that you're running with bogus data, you're going to get the wrong thing out the end of it. And Neil Ferguson has also a track record of getting it wrong, I think, four or five different times, right? About the foot and mouth disease, all this stuff, right? They slaughtered hundreds of thousands of pigs and stuff like that. And like, this is just, they're living in a fantasy world, making computer simulations, which has nothing to do with reality, yet their proposals become official government policy. It's just extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah, but if we go back to that sequence that I talked about earlier of starting in China, making sure China was the blueprint for the West, when this what I say is a fake virus came to the West, even with fixing the figures, they couldn't generate enough people who died to justify the fact that this was a dangerous, lethal virus.
Right.
And I was sent an explanation quite a few weeks ago now of an American medical scientist who was pointing out that the test was not testing for COVID-19, that there was no test for COVID-19, that in his view, there wasn't a virus, that it was basically made up. And he said, because there is such a large, quote, family of coronaviruses, large numbers of people, almost everyone, will have forms of coronavirus in their bodies, kept in check by the immune system. He said, if you want to create a panic from a fake virus, pick a coronavirus. Said this in this in what he wrote weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks ago, and of course 6 weeks before this broke in China, Bill Gates and the World Economic Forum, the 1%, and the Johns Hopkins University operation ran this Event 201 simulation of a pandemic of a corona virus. But what this medical scientist was saying is, and he was proved so right, is that if you don't have the death numbers because you don't have a virus, basically, then what you have to do to get action like the lockdown is you have to project forward and say, well, people aren't dying in large numbers now, but this is what's coming.
The second wave. That's what they're pitching now. Have you seen that?
They're pitching the second wave. I'm talking about the first wave.
Right, right.
They did not have enough dead people to justify it. So what they said was, and this scientist predicted it, they will say, this is what's coming. We've got to take action now because this is what's coming. And that's when the Gates funded Professor Neil Ferguson of the Gates funded Imperial College in London came out with these computer model projections, which are a doddle to manipulate, saying 500,000 people could die in Britain and up to 2 million in America if lockdown didn't happen.
Right.
So they introduced the lockdown not on facts that were happening in real time, but on the projections of what was coming by Ferguson. And again, you have the Gates connection. And so once they had the lockdown and everything was in place, this guy, Ferguson, starts rolling back his predictions. And exactly what this medical scientist said they would do, he said what they will do is when the numbers that they predict in their models don't come about because they never were going to, they'll say they didn't come about because of the lockdown.
Yeah, that's right. We saved you. Yeah, in fact, we saved you. If you didn't listen to us, we had to enforce this. Otherwise, millions of people would die, which, of course, is not true because we have countries like Sweden to compare to, right? I've talked about this many times now, but you can compare, for example, a state like Michigan. It has roughly about the same population, around 10 million people. Michigan has one of the most stringent lockdown measures in the United States. And they are far worse off than Sweden. Now, Sweden is up there, don't get me wrong. However, what they've done is you have the same issue about the people are dying at elderly homes and stuff like that. And I believe same thing is going on there, that the numbers that they do get is potentially that they are flubbing those numbers or whatever you call it, that they're faking those numbers essentially. Not sure about that yet. I haven't seen much about that. But regardless, Sweden has, you know, they still have consequences, of course, in terms of their economy. It's not completely perfect. It's a international system now, global commerce. If all the other countries shut down, there will be things that Sweden suffer from. But it has not at all been as bad as they said that they told us it would be. I don't know if there's any other countries doing it. I think it was one other, but it's not holding up. That excuse does not work, right?
Yeah. Because the reason for the lockdown had nothing to do with health, and why they had to get it in, get China to be the blueprint and then play it out, was because while you have vast numbers of people with independent livelihoods, either their own businesses or employment with independent businesses, you cannot get a situation of mass global dependency. What you have to do to create that, what I call the Hunger Games society, what I've been saying that was planned for decades, to do that, you've got to destroy the independent incomes of the population and livelihoods of the population to create that dependency.
Yeah.
And so that's why the lockdowns were there. And the other reason they're there is to make life so unpleasant and economically things so dire that you'll almost do anything to get out of lockdown. And this is why Gates, who's an absolute solid state-of-the-art psychopath, has said that normalcy can't be resumed until everyone, literally everyone, the entire population, he says, of the world is vaccinated with his vaccine.
Yeah, and he's already trying to protect himself from liability. I don't know if you saw that clip. He's talking about, well, you know, we're going to administer this to 7 billion people. We've got to make sure that, you know, we're going to have side effects, essentially what he said, right? And the pharmaceutical industry is already protected anyway. There can't be class action lawsuits. There was a law passed, I think, in the U.S. back in the 80s or something like that, where these companies are completely, they can get out scot-free, right?
Yeah. They have a vaccine court in America where the taxpayer pays compensation against a very, very high bar to prove your case. And it's already paid out $4.2 billion in compensation. And he's predicted, he's understated it massively, there could be 700,000 people who have side effects. So he wants immunity from comeback for those people because he's a psychopath. This man is a psychopath. And what I when I look at him, he has no humanity. He has no human energy field. His eyes are dead. His whole persona is soulless. You know, if you are AI computer-like, then you're not going to have any emotional consequence or for your actions and how people suffer from your actions. You're not. And if you look at the what's called the hair test of psychopathic traits, named after the man who developed them, right at the top of the list of psychopathic traits is no empathy. The inability to put yourself in the feelings and experience of those you affect. And only a psychopath whose empathy deleted could possibly do what Gates has done, could possibly demand what he's demanding. The man's a software salesman. You know, what's he doing running global health policy? It's ridiculous, but if you understand the nature of the cult, then it makes sense because this technology, this smart technology and stuff that's still to come, it's not being developed by geeks in garages. It's not. If you look at the way that this technological society plays out, there's no gaps where people are sitting around a table strumming their fingers, waiting for a geek to develop the next stage. It flows seamlessly out. Look how fast it's happening now.
Yeah, very quick.
And the reason for that is it's being developed in the underground bases and the inside mountain facilities. And because of that, they need cover stories and cover people to explain how it's coming into the public arena. And there are other people that front up other areas, and they become very, very rich as a result. But there's a rider. The rider is you'll become very, very rich, but a great chunk of what you you generate in wealth as a result of fronting up our technology or this, that, or the other that we're doing has to be spent on advancing our agenda. So if you look at the, for instance, the funding history of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, it's a wish list for the cult, whether it's in education and Common Core in America, whether it's Monsanto and GMO, whether it's vaccines, etc. It's a wish list. And another one who is a front in this same basic way is George Soros. So George Soros becomes very rich financially through financial transactions. And any idiot can do that if they know when the market's going up and when the market's going down, because people who own them are telling them. And so his role is that vast amounts of his wealth has to be spent on the whole woke, politically correct, transgender, climate change arena, and on manipulating mass immigration through his front of the Open Society Foundations. The last figure I saw, he'd handed over to that $32 billion. So this is how it works. You've got Bezos at Amazon who's fronting up that. So you become very rich, but you have to spend great amounts of your wealth on advancing the agenda. And here we have Bill Gates. He's been designated to front up global vaccination. And as a result of that, he's running the World Health Policy. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, exactly. And now when the U.S. is backed out of the World Health Organization, Bill Gates is number two of funding them, by the way. And China, of course, going to step in there, which has that interlocking agenda that we talked about before. So it's pretty interesting. I wanted to play this clip, too, because I want to return to that issue, whether or not it is going to be mandatory. I showed the headline before that Trump is mobilizing the military to help now, presumably to administer the vaccine. We'll see what they say. They had an interesting press conference with a general, forget his name, and then this guy, Manshif Slaou, the Moroccan-born pharmaceutical executive that have been with GlaxoSmithKline for the longest time. And even the fact that he just mentioned that they had positive results, I think it was Monday morning they did a press conference, caused the Moderna stock to skyrocket, by the way. And supposedly now he said, oh, I'll forego of the $3 million that I made on this. He said, like, oh, how nice of you. So there's no conflict of interest then. I get it. But anyway, let me return to this here and play this clip to you, because this is presumably we could see how someone like Alan Dershowitz, who of course went on Jeffrey Epstein's Lolita Express, he went to Pedophile Island, all that kind of stuff. But don't worry, he had his pants on when he was given a massage, so it's all fine. He assumably will actually be the guy who potentially argues this on the Trump administration's behalf, that it must be mandatory. Listen to this here. Let me make sure the volume is up so we don't miss this. Yeah, here we go. Check this out.
Legitimate. Let me put it very clearly. You have no constitutional right to endanger the public and spread a disease, even if you disagree. You have no right not to be vaccinated. You have no right not to wear a mask. You have no right to open up your business.
Wait, can I stop you? No right not to be vaccinated? Meaning if they decide you have to be vaccinated, we have to be vaccinated?
Absolutely. And if you refuse to be vaccinated, the state has the power to literally take you to a doctor's office and plunge a needle into your arm.
What do you like? How do you like that, David?
Well, you know, there's a lot of people in the world that I observe that I wouldn't like to spend an evening with, but
Dershowitz.
Sorry, go ahead.
Up there as a deeply, 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 deeply unpleasant piece of work. Of course, what he's quoting is a test case at the Supreme Court early in the last century, I think it was, where someone was challenging the imposition of vaccinations in one of the states. And the Supreme Court, not surprisingly, went against him. And so they're quoting that as a precedent.
Yeah.
They've got two things. One, their prime goal is mandatory vaccination. If there's enough pushback and they really can't pull that off, then their fallback position is you cannot travel, you cannot come out of lockdown unless you are vaccinated. And that's why you keep hearing this continuous mantra. We hear it in America all the time. We hear it in Britain all the time. We've heard it from Ferguson and the advisors to the British government, and indeed the British government, that we cannot go back to normal and we cannot fully come out of lockdown until there's a vaccine. So they're going to try to eke this out as long as they can, so that they are saying, you want to come out of lockdown, you have the vaccine. That's their fallback position. But mandatory is what they really want.
Yeah, it's scary, right? I mean, if there's no way out of this, this could be, I don't know. I do think, though, David, that there's a massive pushback that's going to come in the wake of this. I've seen a lot of people, unfortunately, of course, a lot of people are afraid, as you said, that they go along with it. They're scared into submission by the pressure from the media, the incessant coverage of this, the constant looking at the death numbers and stuff. And frankly, as we said, it's not that high. I mean, it's like if you just compare it to the flu, it's not high. It's just, we don't know the exact numbers yet. But even if they do these antibody tests which they say they're going to do, the serial test, I believe they call them, that will probably just prove that a lot of people have contracted. Well, I know this question exists, whether or not it is overlapping with exosomes or whatnot. But regardless, it looks like a lot of people have had this thing already. And a lot of people, Iceland had some interesting study too, where they said it was over 50% that have been tested positive didn't show any symptoms. The majority of people apparently don't. And again, that could be for that reason, that it's just a normal immune response that they're measuring, of course. But still, what do you think will happen if this thing is it's mandatory? Military will be rolled out to administer this thing. What kind of pushback do you think we'll see? And what's next in that plan?
Well, the reason they're rushing the vaccine, which is putting their credibility on the line because of the speed. I know people who are not into any of this stuff who are going, hold on a minute. How can they roll this out so quick? But they are trying to get the vaccine circulating as fast as possible, because they know with every week that passes, more and more people are going to see through it. And the longer they leave it, the less chance they've got of pulling it off, because more and more people will have seen through the scam. But already enormous numbers of people have. This has been a wake-up call for so many people. You know, we've all had over the years the line that, a few people can't control the world. That's mad. Well, they put about 3 billion plus people under house arrest in a matter of weeks, a handful of people relative to the 3 billion. So that idea that a few can't control the many, unless you're completely stupid, has gone out the window. It's no longer sustainable as a position, because we've seen how easy and quick it can happen. And there's a lot of reevaluation going on, and not just either in one area of society, right across society. And, I as always, remain optimistic, because I remember 30 years ago, no one ever wanted to know about this. Nothing. Talking to 8 people in Chicago and stuff. It was just ridiculous. But that's not the case now. The interest and the people that are focusing on this, what is going on, is absolutely enormous and growing all the time. And they've got a battle on to pull this off. And I think it's a bigger battle than they thought it would be.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. That's what I'm hoping for. We'll see. But it's interesting how it's, united a lot of people in terms of I even know people who are, they're critical of Trump and stuff like that, of course. But I've dubbed it the Trump vaccine, because he and his administration is the one they're pushing this now, right? And that they're getting the military involved and all that kind of stuff. And it becomes an unquestioning thing for them if it's just Trump behind it. But if Obama pushed it, right, they would be just up in arms about this stuff. So it's kind of interesting how they've done that. And it looks like the liberals, the progressives, the MSNBC, CNN consuming crowd, they're also actually very pro this. They seem to be just like, this is the science, right? This is very believable. Anyone who questions this is crazy kind of thing. So they've gotten large, otherwise, politically polarizing kind of oppositions to just be like, yep, the vaccine is the right way to go. So that's been interesting to watch as well.
We don't have a left of center political system anymore. The left of center political system that I grew up with in the 60s is now woke. And woke is a tyranny. It is a fascistic, communistic tyranny, and it's been funded overwhelmingly into place by people like George Soros. And so you have this alliance between billionaires and the woke social justice warriors, an alliance that would never have happened before the genuine left was hijacked. So the Democratic Party has become the political face of woke in America, and thus it is further to the right in many ways than the Trump administration, even, because its contemptuous of freedom of speech. It's contemptuous of anyone who has a different opinion. And that's exactly the world that the cult wants to create, the Orwellian world. And that's why the cult has funded into existence this whole woke mentality. And what are they doing now? They're saying that this pandemic has presented the opportunity to create a whole new economic system, which is what I've been saying and many have been saying in the alternative media was planned, and that it's the opportunity to introduce measures that will save the planet from climate change. So now we have Joe Biden, when he can remember his name, who's looks likely to be the opposition to Trump at the next election, if there is one, you know what's coming, who's now named Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez the face of the Green New Deal, which is just a communistic Marxist centralized dictatorship proposal. He's named her as his co-leader of his climate change energy policy, which is like putting an arsonist in charge of a fireworks factory, really.
Yeah, I saw that. They're going to try to bridge that gap, and the Green New Deal is just crazy. The European Union has their own version of this, too. I covered that a while back. And also, of course, you had the EU doing a fundraiser together with a lot of big voices, big political movers and shakers. Melinda Gates was there. I forget what it was called, but it was something about basically it was a pledge, a fundraising drive by the EU initiated by them. And like verbatim, this is obvious. It's a controlled narrative. We understand that. But there were so many different voices from all over the world. There was all these different people and organizations and groups and stuff, and they all repeated the same thing over and over. Well, this is a global problem, so we have to have a global solution. And it was like more global government, more oversight. We could actually argue that it's because of globalization. That even if you believe there's a virus or not, that the spread of this thing came about because we live in such a globalized world, right? Things are not local anymore. It's just everything is open borders, movement of goods back and forth. Reasonably, if the World Health Organization had taken the responsibility in the early days and declared it a health hazard early and said, we recommend the countries do not, letting people from China or the goods from China and stuff like that. It was proven that this virus, they said anyway, that it was survived on packages. And I saw some studies 2 days, some people said even 2 weeks and stuff. So this is crazy, right? But my point is, they're offering us more of the very item that actually got us to this point in this place.
Yeah.
Retract back, make things local, have things small in your area, make sure that you do things there. That would solve a lot of these issues. But we're going to get pedal to the metal globalism in the wake of this, David.
Exactly. Well, first of all, the idea you can catch a virus off a package is so insane. I'm struggling to breathe. There has actually never been scientific proof that viruses cause illness. And what? Don't be crazy. No. Just keep repeating the lie and people believe it.
It's called germ theory still, right? Isn't that what the thing is? Okay. And you have the postulates, I think it's called, right? Where you need a virus to pass this, right?
Yeah, the Koch postulates, they were developed by a guy called Robert Koch, a German physician, in 1890. And it was a series of things you have to do to prove that a so-called infectious agent is causing a disease. And the first one, one of them is that everyone has to have the same symptoms. But the key one is you have to isolate the virus or the infectious agent you're claiming. You have to isolate that from all other genetic material. So you've only got that. You then have to put this agent into a living host, and it has to get what you say this agent is causing. You then have to take it from that living host and put it in another living host, and they have to get the disease you say it's causing. And then even that's not total proof, but you're closing in on, you know, there's a very, very good chance this is A is causing B. Not one single one of those postulates has been done with COVID-19. None of them.
Right. Yep. So it makes sense that we can and should be able to question this, right? Which again makes the censorship just so much more bizarre and so much more insane on top of it. But as you said, this is all they have. They have to have, it's a narrowing corridor of opinions, right? And even if people at this point, I've argued this now for years or whatever, but they always begin in at the edges of where they think that they will get a lot of support. And in some cases, people, they do sign up to it. They say, yeah, this is nonsense. Censor this, blah, blah, blah. It's fine or whatever. But it's a shrinking corridor. It's a narrowing corridor. And eventually, there will be no other opinions allowed. I mean, it's going to be something else that bothers them tomorrow because someone talks about something. So how do you – I wanted to ask you here – yeah, I jump in there, David, before I ask my next question.
Now,
yeah.
The situation you just described, I mean, we're pretty much there now.
Right. Yeah, because I wanted to ask you how you're seeking to move forward as well. And again, whatever you want to share with us here as we're coming up towards the end here of – well, the censorship against you, but you had a DDoS attack. I know that you have Iconic set up, which is another, you know, platform. But I know, was it Vimeo that banned you as well? You had stuff hosted on Vimeo first, and then they took it down as well?
Yeah, what happened was I did an interview. I did three interviews, actually, in the period of this this pandemic hoax. A station in... or an organization in London called London Real. And the figures those interviews got were through the roof. And they've got bigger every time. And I did the second one, and it was streamed live. And then on YouTube, and immediately ended, YouTube pulled it. And then it was taken down. But it was email to email and on social media. And it got enormous numbers of views that way, and we have to start using that system very much more and get really organized with it. It's been put into several languages, including a Chilean, I know, and others, Italian. And then soon after that, Facebook pulled my page, or pulled the interview. It pulled my page later, but it pulled the interview after it had got a million views on Facebook. And then Vimeo, it's kind of interesting. We were building our own player for Iconic. So we play our own videos. We don't need these outside sources. And we were 2 weeks from introducing it when Vimeo, who were hosting it at the time, pulled 700 plus videos on Iconic. Which Jamie, my son, to his great credit, and some of the members of the team, spent about 3 days doing nothing else, literally morning and night, putting them all back. And it's all back to normal now. Then we got David Icke attacked, DavidIcke.com attacked this week. They've also tried attacking.
Looks like it's back up right now, by the way, which is good.
Yeah. Because what we've been doing today is putting in loads of protections, and there are others to come. So they tried to bring Iconic down, they couldn't because that's very well protected. So we're just going to go on the pushback. I mean, I have enormous support now compared with what I did just a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
and I've got this book coming up, which is coming out on August the 14th. Which, if I put a pin in a date and a year for this book to come out, it would be when it's coming out, because it explains the lot from people who know a lot to people who are new to this. Explains the lot, and then hits the pandemic at the end, which completely explains the first part of the book up to that point completely explains what the pandemic's about because of what it's giving to them. It's exactly what I said in the early part of the book is that they won. So that's coming out, and we're just going to push back on them. With Iconic, people can go and have a 7-day free trial and see what they think. It's 700 plus documentaries, series, and interviews, everything you can think of on many and various subjects. We've got a major full-length documentary coming out very soon called Unnatural, which is about the whole smart grid electromagnetic fields. We've got one coming out on vaccines, and there's just loads of stuff in there on a great range of subjects. And funnily enough, you know, they're nothing if not pathetic. Vimeo gave us a reason. They just took the videos down. They didn't even give us a day's notice or anything. They told us that one of the reasons they did it is because there are videos on there that question the safety of vaccines. So there you have another example of the fascist nature of Silicon Valley that we're now dealing with.
Yeah, we do have options, of course, which is good. They're starting to pop out. I think that platforms like YouTube, of course, they're seeking to become just cable TV. They're turning their backs on their creators. People have exposed that now for some time. I do think BitChute has issues and problems, of course. You're on there almost 30,000 subs, and we have around 30,000 as well. So we were banned from YouTube, October, I think it was 2019, and then it was a piece in The Guardian. That got our Facebook page removed. So I very much know what you're going through, but I can't imagine what it would be like to lose a million subscribers on YouTube. We had like 300,000 or something, but it's just so nuts, right? But we have options. BitChute is good. Yeah, go ahead. Jump in.
This is a common theme that you just brought up there, actually. The YouTube, pulled the London Real video, interview after being approached by the BBC to ask how they could allow it. Facebook pulled the same interview after independent television in Britain, independent, I love it, approached Facebook about how they were still running this interview with Ike that YouTube had pulled.
Yeah.
The Guardian website ran an article by a journalist, an ultra-Zionist journalist called Nick Cohen, and he claims to be a liberal. I love it. And he put the case forward for the liberal case for banning David Icke from social media. I love it. You know, they're nothing if not idiots. And that started the sequence. That article started the sequence. Again, another media article started the sequence, which led very quickly afterwards to this Center for Countering Digital Hate getting me banned via YouTube and Facebook. And then CNBC? In America, owned by Comcast, which is has big connections to Gates. This network then approaches Spotify to ask why they're still running my interview. And yeah. Spotify pulled it. So you have this sequence, this common theme of people bravely, self-deludedly claiming to be journalists who are working to get real journalists banned. It's extraordinary.
Yeah. As slightest pressure, David, just the slightest little pressure or controversy, they just fold, right? You'd think that these big platforms like YouTube, who has, again, special protection by the U.S. government, they can't be held liable for it, you know, Section 230. You'd think then that they would have a little backbone and stand up, but they don't. They fold immediately. It's amazing to me.
From the cult point of view, the cult owns CNBC. It owns The Guardian. It owns the BBC. It owns independent television. And therefore, and it owns these organizations that I was talking about. And it owns YouTube and it owns Facebook. So basically, one arm, one wing, one front demands another part of the cult front that something happens, and the other cult front then says, "Oh yes, okay, we'll do it." It's all internal that it's going on. You know, give me an excuse. I mean, you know, YouTube did not ban me until there was a complaint from this digital hate organization. Then suddenly the whole thing went overnight.
Yep. And again, no reason, no. I guess they have that now in the terms of service for whatever reason we find it and stuff like that. Unfortunately, we're stuck with that right now in terms of like, you know, we agree to these terms when we sign up for the product. Doesn't make it right. I'm not trying to argue that, but I'm saying we can't legally. It's very hard to fight this because we sign up to it, right? But I've shown this a couple of times, and maybe we can end on this here. But you know, these people talk so much about human rights and all that kind of stuff, right? They continuously tell us that that's what, you know, their foundations and stuff like that. And I've showed it a couple of times. Let me pull it up here. It's the actual human rights Article 18 and 19 that talks, here it is, there it is, that talks about this here. And it says in there, it says, especially under Article 19 of the Declaration of Human Rights, the United Nations, right? It says, everyone has the right to freedom of opinion and expression. This right includes freedom to hold opinions without interference and to seek, receive, and impart information. That's what we're doing on YouTube, right, other places. And ideas through any media and regardless of frontiers. So these people cannot even uphold, David, the Human Rights Charter. And again, I'm not saying I'm a huge believer and I think they used it for nefarious purposes, all that kind of stuff. But still, they can't even uphold that. It's amazing.
No, because if they did uphold that, then there would be the free flow of information about this pandemic and the official story would be all over the floor in pieces with someone going to get the Hoover. So they have to be hypocritical, and they have to be fiercely censorious, because if they weren't, the house of cards would come down. But you know, I remain very optimistic. I think we're going to have some surprises along the way, and this cult's going to have a lot of surprises. I'm more determined than ever before that they will not prevail. And more confident than ever before at a time when I should be not confident at all.
I think it's massive overreach. I just think it's too much. It's too much and it's too quick, right? And the censorship is getting out there and stuff like that too. So that's very encouraging. But yeah, so davidicke.com, I'm glad it's back up right now. It's kind of I don't know if the news section is not there or whatever, but it's up. It's back up. You mentioned Iconic. I want to make sure we plug these things here too at the end here. Iconic.com. Which is a platform where you host all your material and stuff like that, which is, of course, a way to do it moving forward. At the same time, you are on other channels as well, such as your BitChute channel. Also, actually, I wanted to make sure we plug, have you heard of Alt Censored? They actually had us when we were taken down. Let me see if I can find this here. Alt Censored had all of your archives up here. Let me see if I can find that, your piece here. Very good service. They have, they essentially do like a little snapshot of whatever you had actually on your YouTube channel at the time. I can't find that right now. Let me see if I can pull that up. I will find it here. But yeah, I had a story here on the side about you being banned. I'll pull it up in a moment. But that's very good. Altcensored.com. Your BitChute channel. What other places can people find you? Twitter, I guess, for now. Are you hopeful you'll have your Twitter in the future?
But now, yeah, there's been a tremendous effort to get me off Twitter. The people that got me off Facebook and YouTube went for Twitter. On that, and then this news guard turns up, this neocon operator. They produced a report to Twitter to get me off. This is after the first group failed, but I'm still there for now, you know.
Yeah.
So we'll see where it goes. But you know, I remain tremendously optimistic at a time when I shouldn't be, and we need to keep going because.
Now is the time to fight back. If anything, there's never been more important that we fight back. You can't give up now. We're also, I mean, the censorship proves that it's a system that's very uncertain. It's scared in a sense. It wouldn't lash out like this on small alternative independent journalists and media outlets that are fighting back in the best capacity we will. And in many regards, we get more views than some of these mainstream media platforms. There is a portion of jealousy, but then there's also a portion of like, you know, too much is getting out and it's exposing them, right? So that's a good thing. That means that we have some of these people on the run and they're trying to cover their tracks, essentially.
Exactly what they're doing. We need to understand the dynamic. This is not a dynamic of power imposing itself for power's sake. the only power this cult has is the power the human race hand to it. This is about basically knowing that their position is very, very tenuous. And I see panic all over the place. You don't come out and say that someone's view should be made illegal about a virus unless you are in panic mode.
Yeah.
So I laugh at them. I think they're funny. I think they're pathetic. Clearly I have more power than they do. Otherwise they wouldn't be bothering with me when they have control of so much. They're very vulnerable and they will come down and I'm going to be alive when it happens.
Fantastic. David, it was a pleasure having you back. Thank you for joining us again. Always good to see you. Keep up the good work and hope to have you back again.
Thanks, Hendrik. It's lovely to see you after all this time.
Ladies and gentlemen, hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you so much for watching today. It's great to have you with us. Of course, redice.tv and redicemembers.com is our websites in case we're censored, but we are on BitChute, also on Library and DLive. Check out some of the links down below. For now, we are also on Twitter. If you do want to watch us live, we do live streams on Wednesdays, 5 p.m. Eastern. That's 11 p.m. Central European time or 2300 hours. Do the no-go zone on Wednesdays. It's a solo show that I do. Do some of the latest news, a little bit more in-depth into some stories. That on Fridays, 5 p.m. Eastern, that's 11 p.m. Central European time or 10 p.m. UK time, we do Flashback Friday, a little bit more laid-back show. We try to have some fun, talk about some of the latest news. Usually Lana and I co-host that show together, but Lana's been off for maternity leave because of a new addition to the family. So I've had some guests, some great guest hosts with me the last few Fridays here. But check that out. We do that live. You can watch it on vk.com/redicetv or redice.tv/live or dlive.tv/redicetv. A couple of different ways. All the links are down below. And then usually Tuesdays and Thursdays, we either do shorter videos or interviews such as this one. And then on Sundays, we do an exclusive show at redicemembers.com called Weekend Warrior, where we go over some of the latest stuff. And it's a bit more produced as well. Definitely more professional looking shows. Definitely check that out. Great way of supporting us as well. Make sure that we can continue doing the show. redicemembers.com. All right, guys. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed the show with David Icke. We'll be back with much more here soon. We have interviews and shorter videos usually coming up Tuesdays and Thursdays. No goes on Wednesday, Flashback Friday, Fridays, and of course, Weekend Warrior Sundays. Until next time, take care. Stay safe. Get outside. And we'll talk to you soon.